Well, we're back, and my name is Jeffrey Davis. This is Radio Entrepreneurs, and we're always telling the stories of entrepreneurship. That's what's important about this show, and that's what we're publishing on our YouTube site and our radio interviews. We're being hosted all week long at the great law firm of Davis, Mom, and D'Augustine. That means I'm sitting with Pat Clendenin, who's my bodyguard for the whole segment.
Bodyguard for life, Jeffrey. Thanks so much for being here, and always appreciate it.
You know, that does give me a sense of security, thinking that you're out to protect me. Again, you've invited our next guest. I think you've made my life a lot easier. I know you have a lot of respect for this person. John, it says T. Lynch, from Davis Mom. Welcome.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
And do you want to tell us a little bit? I assume you also do a lot of M&A work, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your practice?
Okay. My practice is substantially M&A. I started doing this when I first became a lawyer. We represented Donnelly Outdoor Advertising. My first major projects, we sold all of their companies from Maine to Florida. We actually ran the companies and then sold them all off. So I cut my teeth on that. But over the years, I've been involved deeply in M&A, and I have a background in accounting, which helps a great deal in M&A transactions. So I do, last year I did 3 or 4 major transactions. That's about as many as you can do in a year. The M&A business over the last 4 or 5 years has just been very dynamic. There was a period where there was very little activity in the M&A area. Now there is substantial activity over the last 4 or 5 years.
Right. Right away I have an interpretation of what you're saying. First of all, I'll give you an opinion. The best M&A people I've seen have a background in accounting. They just understand the mechanics of the deal. They can break it down and really understand it better. The other thing is 3 to 4 deals a year, I assume that means you're very hands-on. You're really working those deals. You're not delegating it all to junior associates. You're really making sure your eyes are on those deals. Is that correct?
That is correct. Davis Mom is a law firm. We've been about 35 to 40 lawyers. We probably have 10 people that work in the corporate area. When I do an M&A deal, I use what I call a conduit approach. And the conduit approach is, all of the information goes out through me and all the information comes in through me, even with respect to the client. And I think that gives us an advantage. Last year, I was doing a substantial transaction and the law firm on the other side was a major law firm. They used 5 different offices of the same firm and they lose continuity. The way we do it with a conduit approach, I think we maintain continuity throughout the transaction and we know all aspects of the transaction. When you talk to their real estate people, they only know the real estate, or right. They only know the tax or whatever. So I think that gives us a significant advantage.
I agree with you. I believe in the team approach, but I believe in you can't build that level of communication and insight when you're so diverse physically in a deal. It makes it very hard.
Well, you have to use a team approach, though. You can't do it all yourself. One of the deals I did last year, the acquisition agreement was 785 pages long. That's because of all the attachments that the other firm wanted to put on it, et cetera. The actual acquisition agreement was probably 80 to 90 pages. It went through 13 drafts. The rest were all the due diligence, disclosure schedules, and so forth that were attached.
Pat, can I ask another question?
Of course.
700 pages. Do you think the client read all 700 pages?
I'm quite sure that the client did not read all 700 pages.
So they really had to rely upon you at
right.
that level.
Right.
That's quite a deal.
Right.
I know if I had a deal like that and I brought it home, my wife, who's a business serial entrepreneur, would read all 700 pages, and she would harass me to death because she would say to me, "I can't believe it. You're not reading the whole deal. Are you reading the whole deal?" And she'd be giving me a hard time.
Well, I'll give you an example. When we sold the Donnelly Advertising Companies, which was 35 years ago or whatever it was, we didn't produce financial statements. The only thing we told the potential acquirers was we gave them the gross revenue figures. That's all. We showed them no financial statements, nothing internally. Whereas today, what it's morphed into today is you have to show them everything.
Right.
And to give you an example, I was doing a deal down in Texas, and the CEO of a large division of a public company, it was like an $800 million division, sat at the head of the table and looked at every piece of paper on due diligence multiple times. So today, the due diligence, and somebody that's never sold their company has to be aware, the due diligence process, they look at everything.
So John,
in preparing
one of your clients for this process, do you have to do, what kind of educational
presentations do you have to do for the executive management team and for the board?
Okay. Well, it's always easier if they have audited financial statements. A lot of smaller companies.
Not reviewed.
Right. Audited. Especially if we're being purchased by a public company. That eases it and it gives them some satisfaction looking at the numbers. But, you know, some clients will say, well, I don't want to disclose that. You have to disclose everything. If you don't disclose everything, first of all, there's problems down the road. But if the acquirer finds out something that you haven't disclosed, then it calls your credibility into question. But as far as preparing, you need to get everything ready. You need to get all of your agreements. They want to see all your agreements. For example, if they ask you to produce all your third-party contracts, which you will, you can't spend 6 weeks gathering those up from various offices all over the country. You have to have everything like that ready. And the board has to be prepared for the process, too, because it's a tedious process. One of the things on more so on smaller companies, and although I've worked on the largest deals I've worked on were two for $500 million. Most of my deals are $100 million and smaller. But you have to keep your eye on the ball. You can work 6 months on a deal. The deal doesn't go through. You've taken your eye off the ball as far as operating the company. There may be damage to your employees because they know that you were selling the company and couldn't do it. So they have to prepare themselves for the process by getting everything ready for due diligence. It's a tedious process. They have to stay with it because it's a challenging process if they haven't done it.
And they have to still hit their numbers, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, I've noticed in a lot of family businesses during the due diligence process, they get what I would call emotional fatigue, seller fatigue, and there's a tendency that they start to not necessarily handle themselves properly. Do you find yourself getting a little bit into some of the stuff I do, coaching your client through the process?
Yes, I do. That's an excellent question, Jeffrey, because I call it deal fatigue. And Paul Ryan was a lawyer who trained me in acquisitions. And he says everybody can get 90% of the deal. It's the last 10% where you really add value for
your
client.
It's the last 5 yards to the goal line.
That's right. And clients get deal fatigue, you get deal fatigue, and you do have to coach them. And a lot of the smaller, when I say a smaller company, I mean 100 million and smaller, sometimes the founder will have a lot of seller's remorse. I know everybody hears about seller's remorse. But two of my deals last year, I was not sure, although we spent months and months on them, I wasn't sure that it was going to close until the actual closing. I thought two of the entrepreneurs were going to back away from the deal because they're emotionally attached.
Right.
And if the acquirer doesn't make them the president or CEO, they're personally offended. I almost lost a deal about 3 years ago because the guy said, the entrepreneur said, "Now it doesn't make any difference to me." But in his heart, he was angry because the acquirer didn't see his value to the company.
You know, I would say the same thing. So many times I've worked with entrepreneurs and their whole sense of self derives from their business. And as they're ready to discard the business, in a sense, they're feeling that they might lose their whole sense of self and their identity in the community. And that whole emotional element starts to come up and needs to be dealt with, I think. And it's a very serious part of the equation.
So John, I had a question because I think it's interesting in addressing the seller's remorse issue. If they are going to stay with the company, and they're going to be operating presumably at a higher level, either as a part of a bigger organization or in an organization with more capital that's going to ramp up in a lot of different ways. Do you do anything with your entrepreneur clients to prepare them for, you know, living in a different world where things are happening faster and moving differently and they have to play in a different sandbox, so to speak?
Yeah, it's very different. I was talking to someone this week, and after the acquisition, they were saying they had to fill out expense reports, and they'd never really done that. Those situations, and everybody's experience is different. In my personal experience, those situations generally don't work out. You have an entrepreneur who's made 100% of the decisions. He doesn't have anybody questioning what he does. He has a board. It's usually a friendly board. And the day after the closing, he's answering to somebody else. And when you've been used to doing something for 20 or 30 years, it's a real shift. And I tell them that it often doesn't work out. In my experience, I would say 80 to 90% of the time it does not work out because it's oil and water. It doesn't mix.
It's all very interesting. John, if somebody wants to get hold of you at the firm, how would they find you?
Well, they can find me several places. They can probably the easiest place is to find me on the internet, you know, on our website.
John Lynch.
That's me.
Davis Mom.
Exactly.
John T. Lynch. Davis John Mom, D'Augustine.
That's how I introduced him at the beginning. I was getting more casual. I apologize.
Well, the T helps me because that's for Thomas, Doubting Thomas. My clients know me as Doubting Thomas.
Well, you gotta be able to break down.
He dots all the I's and crosses all the T's. John T. Lynch. That's the man.
I've had clients that gave me spelling tests. It was kind of nerve-wracking. I want to thank you for being on. Will you come back again?
Absolutely.
When we're here?
Thank you.
And yes. We appreciate it. I think you bring a lot of interesting stories. And I like discussing this whole, seller fatigue and stress and how that whole psychological component. So I think that's interesting. So we'll bring you back again. And I want to thank, obviously, your partner, Pat Glendenin, who's clearly a star, who's backing me up today.
He is a star.
Yeah, he really is. So I think he's a real upgrade from some of your old retired partners that I know, you know.
Bodyguard. Think bodyguard.
Well, that's what Pat said, yeah.
Just joking and teasing if that old partner is listening, because we know who I'm talking about. My name is Jeffrey Davis. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. We're always sharing the stories of entrepreneurship, and we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages.